Welcome into Studio 2 on a Wednesday. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman here. Live from Philadelphia.
I love live radio, don't you?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Tagline, let freedom ring.
Let freedom ring. That's new. I love it.
I actually slept on it because we're talking about those license plates yesterday with the new slogan, let freedom ring.
Mm-hmm. With the bell in the back.
I like it. I like the new license plate. I'm team new license plate.
Okay.
Can't explain it any more than that.
Well, you're going to have to get it. We're all going to lean in. The next time we get an updated set, we're going to have to get it. I need to sleep again. I'm not against
it. You'll see the light eventually.
I need to sleep again.
So Pennsylvania is actually the only state in our region that does not have ocean frontage and therefore no offshore wind in the state of Pennsylvania. But New Jersey is pushing forward with three projects.
Yep.
Delaware, which has not really gotten into the game so far, may be getting into the game soon with offshore wind. So our question for you today, offshore wind farms, do you support or oppose?
And call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And we've talked about this because, Avi, this has been a very contentious issue.
Back and forth.
Biden administration, pro-wind. Governor Murphy in New Jersey, pro-wind, right? But then there's some community groups. There's some marine life advocates, against the wind farm. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to have all sides represented, at least most of the sides, right?
I think we can get them all in, especially if you join us. Again, offshore wind, support or oppose, Studio2@whyy.org, and we'll also address what happened with this Danish company, Ørsted, which was planning to build two huge projects off the coast of New Jersey and then pulled out.
Yeah.
So why? And what are some of the hangups? Because some of the supply chain issues have really affected wind energy, inflation, high cost of borrowing. That stuff's really killing the wind industry right now.
Because it's expensive.
Creating headwinds, as it were. So again, studio2@whyy.org if you want to join that conversation today. But first, we have a trio of news stories we want to get to. Cherry, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, well, Mayor Sherrill Parker held a press conference about an hour ago saying she was standing by her return to work mandate for city employees.
Whole press conference to say, I haven't changed my mind.
The start date for the 5-day in-person work is supposed to start Monday, July 15th, but the city employees union, they've sued to block that order. We still haven't heard from a judge. But Parker, she spent a little under a half hour sort of explaining her rationale behind the decision to bring people back to work. She says she does not apologize for making tough decisions.
Nothing about my standing has changed. We're using every tool in the toolbox to make sure that you can see your tax dollars at work in your neighborhood, and that you can see that we are literally trying to change how we deliver city services in the city of Philadelphia so that you can actually see the results.
And let me tell you, Avi, I mean, Parker cited Washington, D.C., which she said had to lay off some city workers and raise taxes just in order to balance the budget there. And she said all of that was due to the loss of revenue caused by folks working from home. She says she does not want that to happen in the city of Philadelphia. And so she wants workers to help her, people to help her. And she also pointed to the fact that, you know, firefighters, police officers, social workers, sanitation workers,
there's a lot of folks,
you and I, okay, our team, there's a lot of folks who worked through the pandemic in person. So she's saying, hey, 80% of the folks are already back. Most of the folks who are not back 5 days a week come in most days of the week, at least three plus every week. So, you know, come on, people, get on board.
I'm still wrapping my mind around the idea of calling a press conference to say nothing has changed. I think she just invented a new type of press conference.
Yeah.
I announced today that my opinion remains the same as it was yesterday, Cherry Gregg.
She just want everybody to know she's resolute. You can sue her. And you will be coming to work on Monday. I think people were thinking that she was going to change her mind.
Right.
But
it was a nice little head fake, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that issue continues to cause controversy. Another thing that causes controversy, something we discussed yesterday on the show, teens and social media, Cherry Gregg.
Oh.
And this has really changed the way classrooms mm-hmm. operate. The presence of the cell phone, the presence of the smartphone. And more schools are telling kids, leave your cell phone at the door. In fact, put them in these little lockable pouches so you can't use them during the day. You might have seen these pouches, right? If you've ever gone to a courthouse.
Or a comedy show, or it's like a big concert. They lock them up.
They lock them up in these little pouches. And Pennsylvania right now is considering a bill that could lead to more schools doing just that. Here's how it would work. It would create a pilot program for schools to purchase those little lockable pouches. Mm-hmm. Students would put their phones in them for the day and then, I guess, get them back at the end of the day. The pilot program gives the schools money to buy the pouches. But here is the catch. If you participate in the program, you have to ban cell phones in school all day, or else you can't get the money to buy the pouches. Mm-hmm. So that's the trade-off. And if this passes, we certainly could see more districts take advantage of this and pass more policies that get rid of the cell phone during school hours.
Yeah, and states have been putting a lot of money towards mental health services for young people because we've seen this rise in depression and anxiety. And a lot of folks are linking that to long hours online and on social media specifically. Yesterday, we talked about the Great Valley School District and all those mass attacks against teachers using fake TikTok accounts.
Yeah.
And we talked about cyberbullying on the show. I mean, there's so many different things. And so I will say this, one of my niece, she's in ninth grade and they banned cell phones. And she said it was the best thing ever.
In her school. Oh, wow.
14-year-old said it was the best thing ever.
The 14-year-old was on board with it.
Why? Didn't like it at first. Mm-hmm. But she had been cyberbullied in the eighth grade. So when she went to ninth grade, she was happy to not have the cell phone and people not taking pictures and there's no videos. If something happens, it doesn't spread as fast.
That's interesting.
So she's actually happy to give up her cell phone when she walks in school.
And as part of this pilot program, by the way, if it indeed is put into place, schools would have to measure some of the effects of these policies to see if it's something that perhaps should result in a statewide ban. So we'll follow that. And one more story.
Can we get cheesy?
Wow, you can surprise
me. Just a
little
cheesy.
I'm usually the pun person around here. Go ahead, Sherry.
I had to jump in on that one. So did you know that there is a Cheesemonger Invitational that's held every single year to crown the country's greatest cheesemaker?
I have to correct you. It's to crown the greatest cheesemonger.
Cheesemonger.
Here's the difference. Okay.
Cheesemonger Invitational.
It's the cheesemonger. A cheesemonger is like the person that's behind the counter that sort of chops and sells you the cheese.
My note said cheesemaker. I apologize. Cheesemonger. And the winner of this year's competition, which took place in Brooklyn, is Philadelphia's own Jake Heller.
Congratulations, Jake Heller.
And let me
This guy is the greatest cheesemonger in the nation.
He is. And let me tell you what's so cool, because the competition involves speed cutting, speed wrapping, aroma test, cheese trivia. And I love trivia. And blind taste testing.
I would do that. I mean, I would get it all wrong, but I would enjoy the tasting. Yeah.
Yeah. I like cheese. I'm not like a
bold stance there. She likes cheese.
I love cheese. Yeah. I'll sit up there and eat chunks of cheese all day. But I wouldn't know. I don't think my taste
buds. I don't think the cheesemonger is necessarily supposed to eat the cheese as much as sell the cheese. You're right. For this competition, he did get to eat the cheese.
Jake did blind taste testing. That means that Jake ate a lot of cheese. Yeah.
Who ate the cheese? Jake Heller. This guy's, I think, only 28 years old, according to the Inquirer's story about his big victory. This guy's like prime Michael Jordan, Cherry. I mean, he's the top of the game at 28 years old. He's the best cheesemonger in the country. And by the way, works just down the street from us at Reading Terminal Market. If you want to, Downtown Cheese is the name of the business. Mm-hmm. That's where he's the cheesemonger. This guy can wrap, he can cut, he can taste, he can recommend. Jake Heller, he is the greatest cheesemonger in the country, and he wants to go to a competition to become the best cheesemonger in the world. Good luck, Jake.
Go ahead, Jake, and started his cheese-loving career right here in Philadelphia. I love this. I love this story.
And you love cheese, as you just stated.
I love cheese, too. I love chunks of cheese. Yes, I do.
And how adventurous are you when it comes to cheese? Will you go all the way to super stinky?
I don't know. I don't know, but you know what? You lean in on food, though.
I do.
And I've been telling this, and you guys should email Avi and tell Avi he
Don't email me.
Do Dining Al Desco, because he has the best lunches, by the way.
Inside jokes aside, let's get back to the main topic today.
Yes.
Coming up today, we're going to talk about offshore wind. Why? Well, New Jersey's had a huge back and forth with its offshore wind future. There was this big project by a Danish company. That's off the table. Now there's two new projects in its place. There's a third project that's going forward called Atlantic Shores. And then down in Delaware, Delaware had not really done anything with offshore wind. They are at least considering the idea of creating a process to solicit bids for offshore wind. So like kind of the tiptoes, right, into all of this.
And so that is why our question for you, we want you to involve in this conversation. Are you for or against wind farms? Get your comments and email us studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499. Again, are you for or against wind farms? We
and
look forward to hearing
what's
from
your
you.
Favorite cheese? Oh. Studio2@whyy.org.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Offshore wind farms, a highly debated topic, especially over the last few years in our area. In Delaware, a bill clearing paths for offshore wind farming sits on the governor's desk, and the federal government just approved New Jersey's first project off the South Jersey shore.
You know, offshore wind has been up and running since 2016 in this country. The first project was in Rhode Island. But the industry has really struggled to scale up, Cherry. Now, most people agree we need to shift to cleaner energy solutions. But a lot of local communities in New Jersey and Delaware do not support offshore wind farming, and they cite environmental concerns or impacts on their coastline view.
So here to help us discuss the pros and cons are Robin Schaefer, president of Protect Our Coast New Jersey, and Ed Potosnak, director of the New Jersey League of Conservation Voters. Robin and Ed, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us, Cherry and Avi. Very pleased to be on the program with you, and nice to be with you and Ed as well.
Thank you. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you support or oppose offshore wind farms? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. Our email address is studio2@whyy.org. Again, the question, do you support or oppose offshore wind farms?
Ed, I want to start with you. And Ed, by the way, is the director of the New Jersey League of Conservation Voters, backs offshore wind. But I do need someone to set up for our listeners exactly what the state of play is in New Jersey right now, because we had this Orsted project. Now that's gone. We had a project that continues to move forward. Then there's two new projects. There's a lot of moving parts here, Ed. So can you just explain what are the projects moving forward right now in New Jersey? And where are they in the sort of the timeline of completion?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, I'm Ed Potosnak, executive director with New Jersey LCV. And like Greenpeace and New Jersey Sierra Club, we're really glad to see New Jersey moving forward to save lives with responsibly developed offshore wind. We're grateful that we have a governor as a state of play item and a president that they get it. They understand that we need to improve public health by shutting down dirty fossil fuels and create good local jobs here in New Jersey that can't be outsourced, and address climate change, help protect our communities with energy independence. And there's a number of moving parts. One project that is currently active and just received approval from the federal government is Atlantic Shores. And that's the one that's the most teed up to move forward. And we're really excited about that because of the cleaner air it's going to bring. And then recently, the Board of Public Utilities approved two more projects. One is Attentive Energy, and the other is Leading Light Wind. And those are much further out, And as you mentioned, Orsted, which was the furthest along, that company withdrew. And we're actually pressuring them to either use those leases or sell them to someone else so we can get the benefits, including the cleaner air.
Yeah, just real quick, Ed, follow up. So the Atlantic Shores project, from what I was reading, at its nearest point is, what, 12 to 13 miles offshore. And then these new projects that have just sort of popped into at least our public consciousness are like 40 miles off the coast. Is that about right? Because that seems very different.
Yeah, they are very different. Actually, you're probably not going to hear much about the ones that are much further off because you're not going to see them. I think a lot of the opposition that we hear is rooted in one thing and sort of veiled in other sorts of misinformation, and that is the view. Folks are concerned that when they look out in the ocean, what they're going to see. As a shore guy myself, as a New Jersey native, you know, I can tell you that the greatest threat to our shore is climate change itself. But the Atlantic Shores projects are anywhere from 8 to 15 miles off our coast, as many as 20. And that's really what I think has gotten a lot of the opposition whipped up with the fossil fuel funded sort of misinformation.
Yeah. Well, let's give Robin now a chance to chime in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do have one more question for Ed before we go to Robin for the counter argument here. Ed, could you just explain how the construction of this wind farm would work from your perspective?
Yeah, so it undergoes rigorous environmental review with a lot of stakeholdering, opportunity for the public and experts, environmental groups like ourselves to weigh in. Our number one priority is protecting the environment and making sure these projects are done in a way that's consistent with the most protective environmental strategies. Of course, after that review is done and, you know, there's a lot of time for folks to weigh in and the approvals are granted from that document, that's what the developers are held accountable to, mm-hmm. including things like having full-time 24-hour marine mammal observers to shut down the project if any endangered species are in the area, and other sort of protective measures like the time of year with which the projects are installed or constructed to ensure that we're minimizing any nuisance to in species that are in the area. And we know that from migratory patterns, et cetera.
Okay.
All right. So Robin Schaefer, mm-hmm. president of Protect Our Coast, New Jersey. I wanted to draw your attention to something Ed said in his second answer, which is that he believes what people are really concerned about here is the view, and that the concerns about marine life are really just a way to conceal the core argument, which is about view obstruction. So let me give you a chance to respond. What do you see as the big drawbacks of wind energy off the coast of New Jersey?
Oh, thank you for giving me a chance to answer that, because Ed said a couple of things that I take issue with. Our organization is an environmental organization that is actively engaged to protect the fragile coastal and marine ecosystems that we know will be affected if these monopiles, 1,000-foot-tall monopiles for offshore wind are placed in the ocean. We are fighting, we actually engaged in a legal challenge mm-hmm. of the attentive and leading light projects that were approved by the Board of Public Utilities, or at least the contracts were approved by them. So that kind of flies in the face of what Ed was saying, that our organizations and other organizations like ours are only concerned about the view. The fact of the matter is there's a whole litany of reasons to oppose these projects.
And just to be clear, Robin, you're saying you yep. you oppose all offshore wind, no matter how far off the shore it is. That's what you're saying. Your organization does.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, you know, the New Jersey Economic Development Authority put out a coloring book for children, and the coloring book shows a cloud pushing that the kids can color in with a face on it. And it shows where the wind turbines will be off of New Jersey. And if it was to scale, those wind turbines would be about 1,000 miles offshore. Mm-hmm. Now, we wouldn't care if they're 1,000 miles offshore. we'd still oppose these projects. Because
and why, Robin? Why?
And give all the litany of reasons.
It's just plain stupid to put 7,200 tons, I'm talking tons of steel, in the ocean where it doesn't belong. We're going to put, for Atlantic Shores alone, that's 7,200 ton structure.
But why 1, specifically, 000, though, Robin? Yeah. Because obviously there's there's many, many tons of other types of on-land energy generation facilities, whether it's nuclear, whether it's coal. So those are also very heavy, and they're in natural environments, as everything on planet Earth is. But why is it so bad to put these things in the water?
Over the last generation or two, we have seen an incredible cleanup of our ocean. There are people that I've spoken to who've lived in where I live in Ocean City, New Jersey. They've lived here their whole lives. I was talking to a third generation small business owner who said he's never seen the ocean this clean. The ocean is bluer. It is clearer. You see far more dolphins and whales than ever before. There are bald eagles flying around. And he said, why would you screw that up? Why would
So how would this screw that up, though? I just want to get to that point. Yeah, how would this actually impact that?
Because it's a massive industrial development. You're going to put, first of all, these are taller structures, than taller turbines than have been placed in any other project in the world. Over 1,000 feet tall, over twice the size of the Washington Monument. And again, 357 of these over an area the size of Maine, actually the entire all of New England out there in the ocean. And these are in active flyways for birds, for migratory pathways for endangered whales like the North Atlantic right whale. They're also in really sensitive areas for navigation, for aircraft, for our national defense. This getting back to the small business owner I was speaking to the other day, though, he said if they put steel in the water, which it seems to be what a lot of environmental groups like Ed's celebrate, he's out of here. He says that Ørsted did a study that showed that if they build offshore wind off the coast of New Jersey, that tourism will decline by 15%. Most small businesses don't operate on a 15% margin. So he said, you know, again, third generation business owner on the boardwalk in Ocean City, he said he would leave. Yeah. And I have to believe him. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's been studying this for a long time. And getting back to something that was said, these have been around since 2016. And I think, Sherry, you brought that up. Mm-hmm. They started survey work in 2012. When did the unprecedented die-off of marine mammals start? It started in 2012. That's something nobody talks about.
Let me push back a little bit on that. Yeah. So, because you're talking about what happened Block Island, Rhode Island, and this is a Smithsonian Magazine piece written many years after those turbines were installed in Rhode Island. Fish studies that continued during construction and for 3 years afterward revealed that the Block Island wind farm did not destroy, but actually created marine habitats. Mussels and barnacles quickly colonized the underwater structures, attracting fish. Now the turbines are the place to be if you want to hook a black sea bass, fluke, or bluefish. That is according to studies done of that original wind farm in Rhode Island. How do you respond to that?
Well, there's a reason why the fishermen are setting up a compensation fund for fishermen. And there wouldn't be a compensation fund being established if the powers that be that are putting these projects in didn't think that they were going to be impactful to the livelihoods of fishermen. And these are fishermen, you know, again, small business owners, sometimes one boat or maybe a few boats in their fleet, who have been doing this for generations. Mm-hmm. I know many, many commercial fishermen who are dead set against these projects because they know what is going to happen.
So you don't think what happened in Rhode Island is at all indicative of what would happen in New Jersey?
Many years after you put, if you sink a ship in the ocean, it will establish an artificial reef, but it doesn't take away from the fact that you're putting something artificial in the ocean that may disrupt what's there. You know, you're just disrupting the natural ecology of that area.
Yeah.
And we just don't think that putting, and these are the power lines, the high voltage power lines along the seafloor. For hundreds of miles is a good idea either. I mean, we just don't know. There are studies that show that certain species don't cross those lines.
Right.
So you're affecting the natural environment for what reason? I mean,
Robin, we'll stop you there. And the question for today, I want to bring in a couple of comments and get a caller in. The question for today is offshore wind farms. Do you support them? Do you oppose them? Our number again is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. That was the voice of Robin Schaefer, president of Protect Our Coast New Jersey, who is against wind farms. We've also heard from Ed Potosnak, executive director for New Jersey League of Conservation Voters, who supports wind farms. I want to read a couple of comments. Jennifer has said, we need to do something about climate change. I support wind farms. Linda from Livingston, New Jersey says the ocean gets more acidic because of global warming. We need to do something and support renewable energy efforts. We also have a caller on line two. Elizabeth is a physician and wants to ask Ed a question about how we can advocate for renewable energies. Elizabeth, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, first, thank you so much for bringing this up. I'm an internal medicine physician and director for climate health at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University. And many of us as health professionals are deeply concerned about the health impacts of climate change and pollution, because we know that fossil fuel combustion leads to both the greenhouse gases that cause climate change and therefore extreme heat, and also air pollution, which is the number one risk factor for disease based on Lancet's recent global burden of disease study. So the question is, how do you think we can elevate these issues so that people understand that wind energy, clean energy, can actually support public health?
And Ed, that question was for you.
Well, Dr. Elizabeth, thank you very much for your work and for connecting the dots between why offshore wind is so important. If you live in Newark, New Jersey, you're four times more likely to have asthma than if you live 10 miles away, because so much pollution is in that community of color and environmental justice community, including trash incinerators that are currently producing the energy that we're using. And you see that in your medical practice. And we need more folks like you to stand up and fight with us against the fossil fuel companies and for a cleaner environment for inhabitants today. But what I do this work for is really for the children and future generations of tomorrow. In the most densely populated state, where we have a lot of development, we are the fastest warming state in America. We are at 1 degree faster than any other state because we have 17% of impervious cover. And so we're literally warming up like an urban heat island. And that is causing, I think, a lot more medical issues too for our fragile families. You can visit njwindworks.org to sign up and get involved in our work. It's hard to fight for things. It's easier to fight against them. But we need you to join us in this effort, because there's a lot of deep-pocketed fossil fuel interests trying to keep their paradigm, mm-hmm. polluting our environment and negatively impacting our health.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Ed. So we actually have two comments from two other Eds that oppose each other.
Not related.
So here's the first Ed says, I support offshore wind. I go to Nova Scotia every year. Nova Scotia has offshore and onshore windmills throughout. Nova Scotia is beautiful. The windmills do not affect its beauty in any way. Then another commenter who wants to know, how do you explain the whale deaths, Ed? So I wanted to steer that to you, because we have heard this concern that putting these large artificial objects in the ocean will affect migratory patterns, will lead to die-offs. I want you to respond directly to that, Ed, if you could.
Yeah, we get this question a lot. I think it's important to mention that the greatest threat to our oceans is climate change itself. Our oceans are warming, and with it, they are acidifying, and our coral reefs are bleaching, and whole ecosystems are collapsing. And so those of us, like I mentioned, Greenpeace and other environmental groups like National Wildlife Federation, are advancing responsibly developed offshore wind to help protect our oceans and all of the wildlife that are dependent on it. And marine mammals are one of those categories. You know, to protect marine mammals, the number one way is to reduce vessel speeds. These majestic creatures are being struck by boats. We are seeing more shipping from international shipping lanes. And every single necropsy, which is a scientific study into why a marine mammal like a whale had passed away or died, leads to three major causes. Vessel speed restrictions, abandoned commercial fishing gear, and plastic pollution. They're literally eating plastics like it's food and starving to death and washing up on our shores. And we've been working with allies in this area for a long time to protect our oceans and the marine mammals and other wildlife that live in it. And that's why we support offshore wind, because it protects their home.
Robin, let me then ask you, because you said you oppose offshore wind farms, no matter how far off the coast they are. So Sam from Elkins Park wants to know, do you also oppose offshore oil drilling, and are you doing any advocacy on that front? And I'll ask to follow up off what Ed said, do you support reducing vessel speeds and other things that could protect marine wildlife?
Well, first of all, thank you for the question. And I want to push back on the idea that these are farms. Wind farms evokes a very different picture than what these are. These are massive industrial facilities. There's actually not only are they these massive towers, steel towers in the ocean, but mm-hmm. they're going to be power substations, several power substations that are going to look like oil rigs out in the ocean. Short answer to the question about oil rigs is we oppose them 100%. We also oppose offshore mining. We oppose any exploitation of the marine environment and the coastal environment. It's way too fragile to be industrializing those spaces. We've seen a great recovery in the number and the variety of species in these areas. And right now, we're at a pretty pivotal point. And the fact of the matter is, these projects are actually being funded completely by the oil and gas industry.
And the reduction in vessel speeds, you support that as well?
Well, let me get to that. But the Shell and EDF, which are multinational oil and gas companies, own the Atlantic Shores property, the lease area off New Jersey. British Petroleum is another company that's heavily involved in offshore wind construction in the United States. Most of these are foreign oil and gas companies that are developing these projects. Now, as far as vessel speeds,
I'm just trying to understand that point, though. Yeah. I asked you about the vessel speeds. So you're saying that because they also produce oil and gas, they should not be involved in any sort of renewable energy production? I'm just trying to understand the point.
The point is, I think Ed was we've been cast with a broad brush. I mean, they're painted with a broad brush by groups like Ed's League of Conservation Voters as somehow being associated with having oil and gas interests. Nothing could be further from the truth.
So you're just opposing that framing of your advocacy. Right. Okay, I understand.
Right.
Okay.
None of our people are paid staff. We're completely a volunteer grassroots organization. And we've never taken one penny from anyone associated with the oil and gas industry. We've actually We've actually turned down the donations after we've done vetting of individuals. But, you know, most of our individual donations that come to our site at protectourcoastnj.com are small $10, $20, $50 donations. And we use that money for outreach and education. Quite frankly, I think we should be working with groups like EDS to solve the greater problem of managing and the very, you know, critical habitats and doing the best we can to save the environment. Just yesterday, President Biden signed bipartisan legislation. It's called ADVANCE, and it's a clean nuclear energy bill in the United States. After signing that, I can't believe a group like Lake Conservation Voters wouldn't be saying, oh, well, you know, this offshore wind project is frivolous now. Why are we doing this? We should be developing energy that is clean with a small footprint and that is going to, there are untold risks to the habitat and to the fisheries from these projects. Nothing like this has ever been, nothing of this scale has ever been done before. And, our group is going to continue to fight against it because it's not farming. It's, you know, we love farmers, but, you know, and we love our fishermen and we love
and
things as they are.
And Robin, we're going to have to leave right there. We're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Robin Schaefer, president of Protect Our Coast New Jersey. Also, Ed Potosnak, director of New Jersey League of Conservation Voters. We've been talking about wind farming. And our question for today to our listeners, offshore wind farms, do you support? Do you oppose? The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Again, offshore wind farms, do you support or oppose? We're going to continue our conversation after this short break. This is Studio 2. We'll be right back.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Eric. Continuing our conversation now on wind farms, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org.
And we've been getting quite a few comments from our listeners. One from Craig, who says, as far as negative environmental impacts from wind farms, what environmental impact is greater than that of producing electricity from fossil fuels? We may have a few bird strikes, which will be unfortunate, but most could be avoided by siting the wind farm out of known migration routes. Also, comment from Jane, heat indexes of 107 degrees for how many weeks? We absolutely have to get away from fossil fuels and move to alternative energy sources. And so now we're going to take our attention down to Delaware, which is that state has made some major strides when it comes to wind energy. A bill right now is sitting on the governor's desk that could open up bidding to bring the state its own wind farm. To tell us more about it, we have Mark Nardone, Director of Advocacy with the Delaware Nature Society. Mark, you are on Studio 2. Welcome.
Thanks, Jerry.
So, Mark, give us a sense of where Delaware is. It seems like Delaware is many steps behind New Jersey. Can you explain, you know, how close Delaware is to actually starting to see production of offshore wind, and also maybe explain a little about why it took so long, because Delaware's had the ocean as long as New Jersey has.
That's a great question, Avi. 15 years ago, we were first in the nation on offshore wind. We were actually working on a project with a company called Blue Water Wind. Of course, at that time, the economy tanked. There was some general dissatisfaction about the way the government, the state government, was making that deal happen, and the whole thing was scuttled. Here we find ourselves last in the region now. We are the last state between Maine and North Carolina to have an official policy on offshore wind. The great news is that we are getting very close now. On June 30th, the end of our legislative session, we passed a bill, as mentioned, sitting on the governor's desk as we speak, that directs the state energy office to create a protocol for receiving and reviewing bids. It was a bill that was written by many different energy stakeholders, including the utility companies, our public service commission, the public advocate, the community of advocates here in Delaware, and, you know, frankly, outright opposition groups.
Yeah. And I got to ask you a question, and it's kind of adjacent to that. I mean, I know Delaware is also involved in a wind farm project off the Delmarva coast. That one would power Maryland homes. How would that impact Delaware residents, and how is it connected to the bill that could soon very, very soon be signed by the governor?
If it's connected to this bill, it's in a very indirect manner. So the project that you're speaking of is U.S. Wind. They have a project off the coast of Ocean City, Maryland, which is right across the state line. And they want to bring the cables to transmit that energy from the wind farm through Delaware, through one of our state parks underground, and then connect them to an existing substation just west of the beach towns. Many groups, including the National Wildlife Federation, which came up in the discussion a few minutes ago, they are advocating that the developers and state governments work together to find efficiencies, economies of scale. So what does that mean? You know, we're in the process now of approving the permits that are needed to make that happen. The state has negotiated a pretty good rent and some other community benefits to allow that. It still has to be permitted. Now, but once that is in place, you know, is it conceivable that a wind farm off the coast of Delaware could tie into that same cable or that same transfer station? And it seems yes, it could.
Yeah.
So there are some efficiencies to be had there.
Wow.
And before we get you out of here, Mark, give us a sense, if you would hazard a guess, about maybe when we could start to see some action off the coast of Delaware.
Oh, gosh, Avi, that's a great question. I mean, as we know, it takes years to get these projects up and running, to get them planned. It takes, you know, a long, long time just to develop the proposals. Yeah. And then, you know, they'll have to be reviewed here. And that will take a little bit of time as well. I would optimistically say, you know, 7 years at the minimum.
Right. So you're talking about end of the decade into the next one.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's Mark Nardone, Director of Advocacy, for Delaware Nature Society. Thanks for joining us briefly on Studio 2, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me and for your interest in the subject.
Wonderful. And our questions to you listeners, offshore wind farms, do you support or do you oppose? The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We want to bring in a caller who's been holding on. Larry is a homeowner from Brigantine and opposes wind farms. Larry, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Larry, are you with us? I think we've lost Larry.
Lost Larry.
So let me a couple of questions for Ed specifically. That's Ed Potosnak, director of New Jersey League of Conservation Voters, who supports offshore wind. So Jamie from Cape May wants to know about your support for nuclear power. Says it's safe and clean. Why not, you know, put your support behind that? And then Nancy in Wildwood Crest wants to know about these offshore substations and their environmental impact. So a couple of questions for you, Ed Potosnak. Could you address both of those, nuclear and then the substations?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's sort of a little bit of a pivot away from the topic we're talking about now, which is not uncommon in some of the wind opposition, is to talk about other alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
But we are advancing 100% clean electricity legislation through the New Jersey legislature by 2035 to codify the governor's executive order 315, which would include nuclear. And that is something that our organization and a number of environmental organizations are supportive of. But that's not really what we're here to talk about today. One thing that Robin talked about, which was this has never been tested or tried before. It's important, I think, for listeners to know there are over 10,000 operating, functional offshore wind turbines in the world, many of which are in Europe and are successful and don't have any of the sort of negative implications that were mentioned. And someone mentioned, too, about birds. I think one of the commenters, I forget the name. It's important, I think, for us to know that these turbines, where they're going to be, are outside of the Atlantic Flyway. And the reason why is it's to minimize the impacts on birds and also, importantly, bats. So, you know, these are things as environmental groups, you know, we're looking into. I think it's important to just reiterate, if you want to save marine mammals, you have to slow the boats. And, you know, as an environmental group, I can't see why any other group wouldn't be going to the root cause to protect our beloved sea creatures.
Robin, let me go back to a question I asked you earlier, which is that in order to shift to clean energy, we have to build things somewhere. We've built many things in the ocean, not in this country, but as Ed mentions, off the coasts of other countries. We've built things on land, solar farms. These are all sort of quote-unquote unnatural, human-made things. But we have to build something, whether that's fracking, I mean, it could be the old-school stuff, or it could be the new-school stuff. I'm still trying to understand what makes these so uniquely harmful to the environment compared to all sorts of other things that we put in our environment all the time to produce the energy that we need.
So one of the things that Ed said was that there are 10,000 of these around the world already. The only thing I want to comment on that is that none are as massive as the ones that are being proposed off of the east coast of the United States. I mean, the ones off of the New Jersey coast would be over 1,000 feet tall. The ones
and why is that significant? I'm trying to understand what makes these so uniquely bad to the environment.
Because when you put that much steel on top of the seabed, it compacts the seabed, and it compacts the seabed so much that it becomes almost like concrete. And there is wildlife throughout the marine ecosystem, even uh-huh. down at sea level, like right where the base of these are. So they have to bring in tons of rock to fill around the bases of these structures. They're putting concrete into the into these structures, mm-hmm. and the steel that is being manufactured is coming from Denmark, Germany, Mexico, Portugal, and Vietnam, and you have to ship all these massive steel tubes across the ocean.
Ed,
it takes 2.5 weeks to get across the ocean. Now, but I did want to answer.
We are light on time. I just want to give Ed a chance to respond to that, because we are light on time here. Ed, the idea that these are just bigger than what's been built everywhere else in the world and thus would have a different impact. Can you address that?
I think the impact he didn't mention was the visual impact that I led with. I mean, I think that's the root of all of these arguments. And the truth is, you know, the view, and they will be seen from, some of them will be seen from shore, you know, is being put ahead of the health of our communities, particularly communities of color, in the, you know, future that Robin's trying to advance. I think what we're trying to do at New Jersey LCV and other partners is advance an equitable, cleaner future for our kids and grandkids, away from fossil fuels, tackle climate change, and create good union jobs, high-paying jobs in our state, economic security and an energy security, and of course, you know, improve our way of life. And I think those are all critical factors for us and why we support responsibly developed offshore wind.
Real quick, we have about 30 seconds. Robin, closing thoughts.
So we definitely believe that in a cleaner ocean and cleaner environment, we're going to fight for small business owners up and down the East Coast. We're going to fight for commercial fishermen. We're going to fight for our fisheries and our marine mammals. And offshore wind is not the answer. It's industrializing spaces that should be left alone, left pristine. There are other, better ways to address energy needs.
All right. Yeah.
And please visit protectourcoastnj.com.
Robin, we got to let you go there. That's Robin Schaefer, president of Protect Our Coast New Jersey. And we heard from Ed Potosnak, director of New Jersey League of Conservation Voters.
Thank you both. And thank you to all our folks who emailed in today. And we're going to switch gears a little bit, Avi.
Well, before we close the show today, Cherry, I just wanted to acknowledge that we lost a Philly sports legend on Friday. Vic Satius passed away at the age of 100 years old. So who was Vic Satius? I hope you know. But if you don't, because I think a lot
of people, your story. Yes.
Unfortunately, have forgotten about Vic. He was a Philly native, Penn Charter grad. He had a very long and decorated career as a tennis champion. And I had the opportunity to interview him last year during the Wimbledon tournament because it was the 70th anniversary of him winning Wimbledon in 1953. And it's so poetic and sad that he passes away during this year's Wimbledon tournament. This was the place where he had the highest high in his entire tennis career, but he had an amazing career. Vic played his entire tennis career as an amateur. So that means he never got paid.
He just did it for the love of the game. Yeah.
He would go around the world playing tennis, and then he would come home to Philly and work a regular job. He worked at a plumbing supply business. He was a bartender. He was a stockbroker. He had a lot of different jobs in his life. But he was the oldest living major tournament champion in tennis before passing away at age 100. Truly one of the great sports champions Philadelphia has ever produced. And another amazing thing about him is that he played into his early 40s. He was just indefatigable, and he earned a lot of respect for that. And his playing style, Cherry, was pure Philly. He was just a hustler.
Yeah.
It wasn't like overwhelming skill. He was just fast and he was relentless. And if you asked him about it, he would just shrug it off. It's typical Philly style. Say,
humble
what,
guy.
Wasn't no big deal. But it was a big deal. And we wanted to make sure that we acknowledge Vic Satius, who was on our show a year ago, died on Friday at the age of 100. Again, one of the great tennis champions, one of the great sporting champions this city has ever produced.
Rest in peace, Vic Satius. 100 years, life well lived.
Absolutely.
And that, friends, is the end of our show. Thank you to everybody who emailed, who called, and participated in our conversation. And also thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and to our engineer for today, Al Banks, Kevin McCrory, executive producer of today's show. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I am Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you tomorrow.